and to write and beginning of this remarkable visit with Bert and Jack and David. Faye is in the kitchen, in the living room. The language is a little strong. Richard Bert, Jack, and David. This Thursday afternoon, the 5th of September, 74. Channel 2 right, and continuation, the beginning.
Well, it could be a good thing that he would be on his own.
And another thing, if the best thing ever happened to Laura and Ronnie, if them to get away from everybody and start a whole new page. Start a whole new page. They got this other page over here filled up.
Yeah, Ronnie and Laura.
Just get over here and start a new page.
Yeah.
This page back here is all full.
And just forget about a lot of that page, huh?
You just tear this page up back here. Just throw it away.
Yeah.
Just let it go.
Yeah.
And start right here.
Fresh.
Fresh on a new page.
Mm-hmm.
You never feel that way.
I feel like doing it sometimes. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you what, I've got so much road on this page, I hate to tear it up.
Yes, I
do. I sometimes feel like I'd like to be around in a fresh place where I haven't, I don't know people too well.
That's my trouble. I don't care where I go, what town I go into, I learn people just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I make friends.
You make friends just so you don't learn too much about them.
It's like I could call a man right now in New Holland, Pennsylvania, Floyd Frank. Hey, Floyd, how about coming to get me? I don't care where I was at, Floyd Frank is coming to get me.
Mm-hmm.
Old Lonesome Joe. He's coming to get me.
Lonesome Joe.
Lonesome Joe. I could call Sammy, let's see, what's his name? Sammy Clark from Westchester, Pennsylvania. Sammy, I'm broke down. I need some help. Well, where you at, Mr. Cookie? I'll be there. That's good. I could call, Mary Ellen Work and her husband in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be right here. There's Phoenixville, Westchester, New Holland, Honeybrook. Right there's four little towns in the suburban of Philadelphia, and I've got people, I've got friends there that I've made just in no time.
Yeah.
They'll bend over backwards to help me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you ought to have a place, Cookie, where you know people and where you don't do business with them.
That's right. Have no business dealings at all.
You ought to be able to walk around somewhere, you see, where you don't flinch, you know, whenever you think about something. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Well, you don't have any business dealings with them at all.
Well,
Now
those people up in Phoenixville, Mary Ellen and Jimmy, I have had no dealings at all with them. I just met them casually at the Devon Horse Show. They just fell for me and found out what I was doing, or they like horses. They like to work with horses, but they've got no place to keep one, and they don't make enough money to pay $85 a month board on one.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they just like to talk to me, and I can go there, and I'll walk in the house, and walk up on the porch, and Jimmy will say, Mary Ellen, put the coffee on, here comes Cookie. That's just that simple, just that quick.
Well, you can't beat that.
I go in, I drink all the coffee I want. sit down, talk, watch television.
Yeah.
I sat there one night and went to sleep. Lord, I was tired when I got in there, and I sat down in that big easy chair and got relaxed. You know, I went to sleep. And they sat right there and watched television and let me sleep for 2 hours. Turned the television down low. They didn't turn it off because they knew if they turned it off,
you'd wait.
I'd wake up. They turned it down low and let me sleep for 2 hours.
No, you gotta knock around for the next 2 weeks.
I gotta move. I gotta make some money.
I see, if I had this week up there in North Carolina, and then the next week up there in Clay County, but that would hit you right in the middle of the stomach. That'd be the very worst time. Earliest you can get there, the middle of the last week.
Yeah.
I don't mean get there, but I mean get on your way up there. Now, if you leave there, you'd stop on the way back.
Yeah.
Well, then I'd have to hitchhike. All this stuff is in information. Now, you see, if you tape in a thing or write things down, you say, well, the grandchildren, oh, that'll be something for them. Well, that's true. But I'm not interested in the grandchildren. I'm interested in what he says. And I look at it as information.
Yeah.
Straight information. It ain't that I like Granddaddy Cook, or, you see. I got nothing to do with it. It's that. It's first-rate stuff. It's interesting. It's things people ought to know, and they don't have any access to it. That's the reason I'm interested in it. So, you know, it's not what you'd call sentimental or anything. It's just out and out, straight. And God, he was, you know, I've even, 3/4 of it is almost just skipped my mind. And that's the way it is, you see. That's the way it is. You hear stories and you hear experiences and somehow or other they never stick in your mind. You never get them quite straight. You know
yeah.
how that is?
Yeah. Well, the earliest guy that I can go up there will be the 25th.
Yeah.
That'd be the earliest.
On the way back.
Now, this is what I'm thinking. You see, to come into Fayetteville, North Carolina, Fayetteville, North Carolina is only about 120 miles from Greensboro. You know, it ain't that far.
No, we figured that out.
All right. I come in Fayetteville, cut across there to Greensboro, Jack's. Pick you up there and go on in to Dad's.
Well, you wouldn't want to do that. I know you're going out of your way.
That wouldn't be too much. That wouldn't be too much out of my way.
Which way would you normally go?
Well, I have to go in Pittsburgh on 76.
Yeah.
If I went 76, I have to go into Pittsburgh, into Akron, Ohio, and down 77 into...
way around the Mulberry Bush, ain't it?
That's either that or pull them mountains, and I damn sure'd rather run straight road and level as pull them mountains.
I wouldn't want to pull them all the time.
That's right. But you see, what I could do would be to go in there to North Carolina, and leave Greenville in and in Greensboro and go over to Mount Airy.
Yeah. And you know that road for a
and
while.
We wouldn't have but just a few mountains through there. It'd be a lot better than pulling them them big mountains up there in the northern panhandle of West Virginia.
Yeah.
You take out there between Hagerstown and Charlestown, Hagerstown, Maryland, and Charlestown, West Virginia, there's some mountains, mister.
Yeah. Well, what I could do, I could just meet you up there. Now, I'm not going to stay up there that long this time.
Yeah.
But I'm going to, this fall, I'm going up there and work a good bit. And I never have been able to get anything done with this crowd here on this campus. I told you that.
Yeah.
I never have clicked with any of them. Why, personally, all right. But I can't work with them, could you? I won't get anywhere at all there.
You're going up there and work with Jack.
Yeah.
And get some of this, try to get some of this published, right?
Yeah. That's right.
What, are you going to publish, get it published individually, or... Like those two you was telling me about today.
I swear I'd be tempted just to curl up in my trailer down there and sleep through the night.
I tell you, I don't know, Freya. I'm just... I'll be down here tomorrow. Tomorrow night.
This is one Miss Nealon talks with her Nealon. Now, let me see her here. What I'll do is let you take one of these with you and read it.
I'm not good enough reader guy. I can't do too good.
You don't know. This is just like we talk.
I know, but I still can't read.
Is this too much print?
Yeah.
Well, now you see, here's this little, you see, I get it started, what's to come. And I tell my first experiences with Lua Nealon, that was back in before 1960.
Yeah.
And then, here's something that we just ran into. Now this is all, that's all. That's that. Now this is the thing that one of his friends wrote on him, and it's an article, and it's got all the dates and events. But he wrote that in the middle 60s, and he did it just because he thought well of it. Miss Nealon didn't even know he was writing it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, no, I didn't do that. We didn't do that. Now this is a bird walk. We did that. We just went on the bird walk with him and then took notes and then come back and set it down.
Uh-huh.
Now this is this one Rick did over, he went over there at that hardwood planting there. He got 2 or 3 acres over there, and you see this country in here is softwood, is pine, pulpwood. And it's if you want to make them forestry people mad, you start criticizing pulpwood, you see.
Yeah.
Well, you see, this is a little burr right in their britches, you see.
Yeah.
Mr. Nealon holds it to them all the time. But see, we don't put that in. All he does is just talk about the trees.
Yeah.
But all the time he talks about the trees, if you know what's going on, you know it's sort of sticking in them.
Yeah.
Well, it's not mean. It's now this is the one Debbie did with Ms. Nealon. And she's a great club woman. And here's some of the things that she did. State Garden Club, War Work, PTA, 20th Century Club. She worked in all them things, you see, from the 30s on here in Gainesville.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a list she made up, and Debbie found it, and we stuck that in. Now, she went over and talked to us 3 times. And each one of these, she says some little different something about Ms. Nealon, works it out. Now, this is the one. This is the one I was interested in. I did most of the work on this. That Saturday, February morning, they were going to have a bird walk out here, and it was blustery, it was cold and windy, and they called it off, and everybody knew it except Louie. We looked out the window, and there he come, with that little old leather jacket blowing, you see, and that little ball, baseball cap on.
Yeah.
And he come in here and we said, "Good morning, Brother Nealon." He says, "What's good about it?" And he meant it.
Yeah.
Oh, he was out of sorts because they had graded this road down here and he had slipped off in the ditch. And it wasn't hard to get it back out, you know, but he was put out because he's an old roadrunner himself, you see.
I think I remember him sliding in the ditch.
Now what this is a talk that we did that Saturday morning. Now some of it I took down on the tape, about half of it, and a lot of it we just filled in, you see, just after he left. And that's one of the finest things. And you'd have to get into it for instance. Now, this is in the Sierras. When he was about 18, they had beautiful fruit out there. They had figs and peaches, and then they dried the peaches, and they're not like our peaches. See, our peaches wouldn't dry, and they had grapes.
Yeah.
And his daddy was made wine, and he wouldn't sell it till he got 4 or 5 years old. He had several thousand gallons in his basement. And Mr. Nealon was brought up in speaking German. That's all they used in his family. And he had 4 brothers. There was 4 of them. Now you see, that's what's in here. Let's see. Let me see, it was after the break, the Sierras, 1908. And one of those things happened. The gold diggers, dredgers came in there on the other side of the mountain, and they paid double for the water that had been used, they'd been irrigating with, and it dried them out.
Hmm.
And the farms just went to nothing. And there was 7 or 8, he says in here, 7 or 8 or a dozen of them, beautiful farms with all that beautiful fruit, you see, just dried up. While it was drying up, the boy just went out and worked in the country, just went out on the country and worked. And he made hay, and another summer he went up and worked in the Sierras because he got more money. It's a short season, and they paid him $3 a day. Instead of $1 a day and $1 a day. There was no trouble to pull the car out. So they got back to the kitchen, and Mr. Nealon walked in with something in his hand. I brought this along for your inspection, Brother Miles, he said, and handed me the printed annual report on his private forest. And he had a strategy of his own. He told us a story again of finding that lone cottonwood sprout on the highway right away, and then his education, or lack of it, and a 2-year intensive course in agriculture, and then his 3 years as farm foreman. And part of the last story was how he got along with the blacks. He recalled the time this big black named Wesley wouldn't move the hay he got out of his pitchfork. He hadn't been in lumber camps and on ranches for nothing. Rough people were no strangers to him, he said. Now that was my cue. You haven't been in lumber camps, Mr. Nealon. You see, I just pick him up. Yes, I worked in the Tahoe National Forest in a lumber camp when I was 18, starting 19. So you see, it's all informative, just like your dad talks. So rough people were no strangers to me. They were fairly rough out there. See, all I'm doing is holding it on. Oh, you can't go into a ranch out there among cowboys and ranchers and hired people that are too gentle, you know. I've heard the report several times. It's very clear before me. It opens up, I might say, into three narratives. At the outset is this three-man crew. One of the men was a 240-pound fella that he calls a logger from Canada. Apparently, the third man baits him. He leans over and says, you better saw right or he'll jump over the log and knock your block off. Now, but the truth is, nobody makes it hard on a young fella out there on the logging crew. And when I pressed Mr. Nealon on whether the fella ever did get after him, he sidesteps me and says he helped furnish block and oak wood for the one teacher school and so learned to use a crosscut saw. He calls it a crosscut saw. In other words, he knew enough that the fellow didn't get after him. And the one long passage where I press him, it comes out that somebody did get after him, but we never get to that. But he wasn't the one that was, and so on. And he doesn't finish. He also offers to shift to a hay baling crew, the hardest work there is, he says. It's apparently some of the work he did on the ranch that we don't get around to either. But we do in August. He fills that in August, 6 months later.
Yeah.
And I put that in the back. They had bales of hay that weighed 250 pounds, is that right? And had five wires on them.
Never saw one.
There are so many rich loose ends. It could just be when they lost the irrigation water, the boys hired out and kept the household going, and they were in court for 2 years or more. But it was his good fortune in the long run. Misfortune pushed him out into the life of the West just when he was mature enough to experience it, and experience it he did. Now that's the point, Cookie. Because a boy just growing up don't get all this.
Yeah.
So we see action. They fell a tree, and we hear the language as they manage the six big wedges, now the one on this side, and they start out sawing above their heads. And the next part is quiet. It is not chronological. It's a trip up and a stop at the roadhouse. It's so steep, the trip takes 2 days. Wages luring. The ranchers pay $1 a day for a long day. The season is short in the Sierras, and they pay high wages, $3 a day. Now, at the roadhouse, he bunks upstairs for a quarter. He has his own double blankets, so it's clear what the upstairs is like. There can't be much furniture, and everything costs a quarter. A nice lodging, a meal, and breakfast. And I take it breakfast is the eye-opener. When he came down that morning, he found a rough board and a whiskey bottle with some glasses on it, and that was a quarter to him. At the end of the season, they pay off in fine Western currency. That was surely into the blood stream. I got streak. Stream. And affect a man for life. $20 gold pieces. $10 gold pieces, $5 gold pieces, silver dollars, and then change and the silver too, all something to put in a sack. It's visible. It has a weight. And you can hear it, you see. And he talks about that.
Yeah.
This is my language here. I'm just giving a running start, you see.
Yeah.
So the reader, I do it on short space and it's not spread out. The high point is on the way down. He is at another roadhouse. The name of the proprietor comes without a halt in the narrative, old Billy Unkin. He just says it as he gets to it.
Yeah.
After all these years, he comes to it. He doesn't want Mr. Leland to go out there and bed down under the sky in the lot. That's bedding down in the hay in the open. And that's where the teamsters will sleep to save the quarter. It's hard to believe what glimpses we get of those fellas. Their teams are 16, 18, 20 horses. And this is our clearest bit of action. When two of them meet, they're getting on their horses. The wheelers and half frozen. They're sitting on their horses, the wheelers and half frozen. One of them calls to his pal and asks him if he has any whiskey. They're meeting, you see. You see the exchange. He says, yes, he has a little, and he tosses him a half pint. He drinks it down, and he tosses the bottle back to his pal, and his pal has to dodge to keep it from hitting him. Now, that's the story. Now, it's a strange resurrection. Mr. Nealon is as much surprised at remembering all this, you see. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
He's surprised as we are. For one thing, he doesn't understand how a fella could drink that much. You see, years as a state forester and public servant separate him from this experience of his way back then. And somehow he brings it to life again. Two wagons meet and have to pass on a steep mountain road. That section is more than I can relate. On the outside, the horses almost go overboard. They have to pull out so far in the 20-horse team to clear the other wagon. And there's that remarkable glimpse of the 5 tons of freight on the wagon getting underway and the horses pulling so hard they almost touch the ground. Now that's in there. Now that's the sort of recollection he does, Cookie. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you can read that. Yeah. Now you see this stuff here, all this stuff that we worked on, it'll print up in a little old book like this, maybe about twice this size.
Yeah.
But you see, that's got right smart reading in it.
Uh-huh.
And you know what they want for it down here? For 1,000 copies of that, they want $2,450.
Hmm.
And they don't distribute it. In other words, they're printers, not publishers. See, the publisher very seldom prints a book. It's the publisher's the one that sells it. Picks it out and sells it, you see, and people order it, and then they have salesmen on the road, and they distribute it.
Mm-hmm.
What would I do if I had 1,000 copies of it? Just sit on it. I couldn't mail them out. Nobody would want them if I had them.
Yeah.
You've got to advertise them and have them in the magazines and all like that. But see, this would be nice. You see, talks with Lou Nealon, and he's one of those genuine old naturalists. He can walk through that back passage there and see things that I never dreamed was there. I've seen him do it. He walks along there and sees something all the time. I walk along there and sort of look down and don't see anything. Now that's the sort of thing. Now you see, we could get. You see, now there's 10 chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Now we could. You see, if we had a couple of writers like Debbie, as far along as she is. You see, there's no end to what we could do if we had them full time or just half time. And you see, all these things, like that stuff that you filled her in on the sale over there, and then when you got back, well, you see, that's phenomenal. There ain't anything like that in print. Ain't anybody ever gets information like that.
That's first hand, and it's straight from the horse's mouth.
Yes, and it ain't made up.
It's actual.
It happened.
Yes, sir.
Well, now, that's what all this is, you see.
And, well, what I'd like to do, I'd like to take her with me again. I mean, I wish she was footloose and free to where she could go with me. You know what I mean. What I'm interested in, I'm not that I want to be a big wheeler. I just like to pass a few of my experiences on to somebody else.
That's it. That's right. Because some of these nitwits, they ain't got sense enough to do anything.
Yeah.
That's the trouble.
I mean, you got to have guts.
You got to have it. You got to have it, and you don't just sit around punching the clock. Somebody else.
But like me, I know I got to come up with $2,000.
All right. So when are they ever going to happen? When is that going to happen to them?
I got to come up with that $2,000 within a reasonable length of time. Okay. I'm going to make it. I don't know how.
You know, this fella has done similar things in his way. They got him in the early 30s. They got him and a young fellow that just finished school over there, just the two of them. It was a federal project. And they got him to go all over the state of Florida and drill holes and look at the soil and see what it was and what was growing on it and make a map of the soil of the whole state of Florida. Two men. They did it in 3.5 years.
Hmm.
Now, when he was talking about that, I thought it was so ridiculous, I couldn't take it seriously. And I wish now that I had enough sense to listen to it. That's one of the most remarkable things he did. Well, you say, why don't I go ahead and work that up? Well, I'm trying to get this in print, and you can't do it all. If I had a business manager, just like you, if you had a business manager, you see, then we could do a lot more.
Well, it's just like this fella, Jerry Bishop. He's been wanting to do all the bookwork. He's going to do all the bookwork, buy the horses, have them sitting right there.
Yeah.
All I got to do is come in there, load them up.
Yeah.
Take them to Pennsylvania. Sell them. Rest up. Rest overnight.
Yeah.
Come back. Park my truck and trailer. Take it easy till the next day.
Yeah. That's right.
And split the profit 50-50. If we lose, him lose along with me.
That's right. You don't lose at all.
I don't have to lose at all. And then he don't have to lose at all.
But I see what you do. Mr. Nealon gone over this. And anything that we get, you see, you can go over and see if it's straight and see if you want it in there.
Yeah.
I mean, they got all this hoorah about invasion of privacy. That don't mean a thing to me, Cookie. Now, you take here last week. I got a fella up here. I finally found a mechanic. And he come up here and worked on that Alice Chalmers out there. And he spent 30 minutes out there just playing around with it. And he got it so it hadn't run that way in a year. This fella over here, I couldn't get him to put his mind on it. I just sat out over there, and he'd sort of shuffle around with it, and I'd bring it back over here, and it's still wandering around. I don't know what it is. Well, anyhow, that's fine for me. He come in here, and while he's sitting here, two other people come. This fella that I work with, David, down there in Ocala, and the fella that works with him in electronics, he's a radio man, his name's Jack, and he also has dogs. just sitting here, and I was paying the man. And here that fella come in, and they started hollering and jumping up and down, and you know, and they hadn't seen each other in all this time. And this fella had worked for him. He was a service manager for years down there. And they just sat there and told those stories back and forth. But see, everything they told was soul. That's what you want.
Actual fact.
And furthermore, you don't want a just dismal story of it. You want to tell it with a little zip to it, you see. And I'm telling you, one of them couldn't finish fast enough for the other to start. And they were telling it. I remember Jack was telling about this. They run out of water. Couldn't keep water in that place, in that thing. And he got it in there. And took it apart, and he found that they had run out of water, and the motor had got so hot that those aluminum pistons had just melted and gone over like this. And they'd fill it up with water, and it'd go through there and come out the oil spout.
Yeah.
And he'd tell one story after another like that, you see. So, it's not stories, you see, it's actual things that actually happened.
Well, I better get out of here and go to the house, and I got to go find me some kind of a car tomorrow.
Well, now you see what sort of stuff it is. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
And then I'm gonna hook to my trailer. Like I said, I can't work on it at home. There ain't no way. But I'm interrupted too much. I'm gonna bring it over there and park it over at the trailers. And,
park it down here where you got the concrete to work on.
I can't get it in there.
Well, you can put it there. You want it undercover?
No.
Well, just put it right there. Just put it in anything. I mean, just pull it up.
And, what I want to do, I want to repaint the top of it. It's rusting. While I'm not doing that, it's going to take me a little while.
Yeah.
And reseal it, because it's leaking.
Yeah.
I want to reseal those seams across there and put new bolts in. Got to go see Mr. Holt.
Let me get you a little of that feed and a bucket, and you can put it across the fence down there when you go by there. How about that?
All right.
Whatever we want to do, Bert's eyes stressed up like that, and he began to back up, you know.
God damn, I don't want to go in this place, boys. Well, he can come on back out. Well, we didn't know what the hell was going on. Well, she seen him. She seen him, this gal did. And before we left out of there, why, she come around to where we was at and said, where'd Richard go? And I said, I don't know. I said, it just didn't suit his taste or something in here. I said, he got out and went the other way. And I said, why? I said, are you something to him? She said, I'm his ex-wife. Said, we're still not divorced. Just naked her in hell, that woman was. Good-looking woman, too.
I want you to tell Jack about that figuring Dave, that you done did on that, you see, when we was trying to get that speed of 15?
Yeah.
And you buy it already made, you see, and it run the price up. It would get the wrong speeds, too. But it run the price up to $1,500 $2,000. And Dave kept figuring on it. He kept sort of gnawing around on the subject until he remembered that you didn't have to do very much. He could use one of these sturdy 460s and adjust it a little bit. Now you tell him about it.
What is this we're talking about?
That's the recorders we tore down at the shop.
Oh.
To make it run about four times as fast.
Oh.
Just like the gears in the car. We made the diameter of the drive pulley bigger. Took it down to Lynx and had two of them built.
Oh,
did a fabulous job. Took them back, and man, we tore down the machine and put the pulley on there and found out we made it so goddamn big that the darn belt wouldn't clear the clearance on the side of the machine.
Yeah, but the whole idea, did you associate that at the start with that old gramophone of a thing?
No, I was just trying to. First off, we tried to make the motor run faster.
Yeah.
And look at it. We couldn't figure out how to make the motor run faster, so we had to make the diameter of one of the shafts in there bigger.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to increase the speed, I mean, if you can't get it on the engine, then you got to go to your finals and start from the final.
Yeah.
Now, you could accomplish the same thing by taking the final, I mean, what we'd call a ring gear and pinion. You could reduce the ring gear with the same pinion or increase the size of the pinion. I mean, to gain the speed.
We might be going to have to do both. If it don't run quite fast enough, we're going to take the flywheel out and grind it down to where it's smaller. So we would all make one pulley as big as we can go because the belt's limited us. The clearance on these little levers on the side, if I get any bigger, the levers touch the side of that thing.
Yeah.
So if it don't run quite fast enough, what we want, if it don't seem to run as fast as we want, we'll just pull the caps down, we'll grind it down.
Now, let's take you right back to what we learned back in school and over years of mechanic. I mean, gear ratio. A lot of people say, well, with the same engine that, say, turning up 3,600 right there, if I can get a lower gear ratio, my horsepower will increase, say, from of 40 to 60, like that. I mean, this is the way the average engineer or something, I mean, supposedly to be an engineer, would start figuring, I mean, to gain that. But ratio has nothing at all to do with horsepower. I mean, what we call brake horsepower, whether it's in a tape player, a tractor, a truck, automobile, or what have you. All ratio does is just compensate for it. You gain nothing. Now you take an outboard motor. You take an outboard motor, and you turn that outboard motor up 3,600, and you got 40 horsepower. All right, you'll increase your prop. I mean, you cut your prop down to where you'll turn up 4,000 there. You turn up 4,000. If you can't stand to lose here, well, you're not gaining, you're losing. Whenever you, instead of gaining brake horsepower, whenever you go above your 3,600, which your manufacturers has manufactured it to be, when you go above 3,600, you're gaining RPM here to 4,000, your horsepower will drop down to about 38. See? I mean, it's disintegrating, see? Going down. But if you can stand to lose on this side, then you can gain over here. Over here. Now, we used to build speedboats. I mean, I used to be a boat enthusiast. I mean, I could take a goddamn outboard motor and just make that son of a bitch just scream. I'd turn it up so fast. But we'd put it on a small boat to where that we could afford to run with less horsepower. We didn't need that much horsepower, see? So we'd gain it on the RPM side of the engine and put it on one of these damn little old chips. And that son of a bitch would just get out there and that's natural flaw. It took me at least a year to convince the boat racers, Harold Champagne, Johnny Wines, Bob Wines, Floyd Williams, and all of them. Took me at least a year. I had to buy a brand new Martin 60 outboard motor and rebuild that thing and take it out there and put it, which was 9.2 horsepower is what I started with, and take it and put it on the boat and go out there and just run the ass off of a 19 horsepower, which on a dynamometer would turn up 19 horsepower mercury. You'd produce 19 horsepower. I'd take that 9.2 and go out there and just run rings around, just outrun them. I had to do it to prove it. Didn't care about nothing. All you done was win a bunch of trophies, which I don't know where a dozen of them is right now, but it was a trophy that you'd win. And
David, what was problem. That? What was that? What was that machine that you remembered that you used to have a little extra?
Oh yeah, that was the Roberts. The old Roberts recorders. They used to change the speed by just screwing a sleeve.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you'd go from 3 3/4 to 7 1/2, something like that.
Yeah, just by slipping a shaft over.
All right,
yeah.
My recorder is the old Webcord, you know, big old heavy thing.
Yeah.
And you just turn a flip, and that goes from 3 3/4 to 7 1/2.
Yeah. Well, is that what that does? Change the diameter?
Just changes your drivers, is all. That's all it does. Just change your drivers.
Oh, why would they charge $1,000 for extra for a speed like that?
I don't know that. Didn't have the right engineer over there. That's funny.
they don't produce many of them.
Don't fool me on that kind of stuff there.
Well, they went way up on that thing. We were pricing it. You know?
Oh yeah. They quit building the 640 now. Replacement for it's gonna be about $700.
Why was it you wanted the speed increased?
Copy.
Duplicate tapes.
Well, the duplicate
instead
tapes.
I
can realize that on a recorder, the faster you drive that tape, the sharper your recording is.
Until
you reach a point. And when you reach a point, then you distort.
7 1/2 is first rate.
7 1/2 is a good record. You got a better sound, and it takes more tapes.
Yeah.
But it sounds better than it do to record it at 3 3/4.
Yeah. It does.
There's all the difference in the world.
Yeah. Do you remember that old radio preacher, Roy Mason? He sent me, I wrote him one time, and he sent me a bunch of his tapes. He just had one copy. And I put them on, and I thought there's something wrong with him. I'd listened to him over WRUF at that university station over Gainesville, and they'd come through just like an old disc recording that warped. But what had happened? They get that good machinery up there, and they just do it any which way, and it comes through the air, and it sounds awful.
Yeah.
But I put those tapes of his on my machine, and it sounds better than anything I've ever heard on them.
Over there.
And that's what they were using up there. Let me tell you,
David, I want to get portable. I went up to Kentucky, and I run across the Cookie's daddy, Burl Cook. He's up there at the end of the line. He's up there. You can't hardly get to his place up in West Virginia, really. The hardtop stops about 3.5 miles on this side, and it stops on about 6 miles on the other side, and there he is, just going around and up and down those little curves, and nobody goes that way. So at least you can go, you get stuck, you won't get stuck. It's got what they call gravel. That's stream bed gravel on it. But you just go about, I don't know, 10 to 15 miles an hour. And that place is just like it was in 1900.
Oh boy.
And he got a cow and he raises, he got chickens and raises hogs, and that little bottom is just about an acre wide. And he got that fine red clover hay with orchard grass, I guess it is. And you look right into the mountain over there, and you're sitting right up against the mountain on this side. And you know the dew comes down there, and it's them little old warblers come out there and sit on the telephone line, and they and I went up there with Cookie, and he was about talking me down. We were talking, you see. Well, I said to him, now you don't, I learned a long time ago, I can talk and work too. I'd go out there, you see, make hay or whatever you needed to do. And he didn't change the call. We'd go in at breakfast and we'd sit down and we'd talk and push back and talk another half hour. We'd stir around a little and go out in the ports and get established in the morning and we'd talk. He got all sorts of things to talk about, but he talked. And I said to Cookie, I said, Cookie, your daddy's going to waste all this time. Well, he says, if you were to stay here months, he won't do a thing but entertain you. And we talked from the time we got up in the morning till we went to bed at night. And he finally talked me down. I got so his tongue was hanging out. I couldn't even listen anymore. And I'm telling you, he could start, he run a school bus there for a long time. He had 10 children. And he had to do a little something, a little public works, you know. At that time, he did it. They paid about as low as anything you could find. He did that to get his children to school, and he brought up incident after incident after incident, just like Jack and that fella Burns.
Oh well, that's
except he was standing there and he did it the whole damn day.
Yeah.
One right after another, and then he'd go into some other, and then
he had no way of retaining it.
No, I couldn't take it down. I didn't even have a typewriter. And I thought I'd better, he gonna move. He's 75 years old,
yep.
He's in good shape, but you see, at that age, you can slip a disc or get rheumatism or develop a little arthritis.
Old Bart now did get that damn 22 pistol back, though. Somebody spent 6 months in the goddamn can, but now did get a pistol back.
Yeah. I gotta go up there and get some of that down. It's the best talk I ever saw. Oh, it is fresh. It is fresh. And I got to have something, a little older. I'm not going to try to use the deck. I'll just use these. And now, you know these things you scoop. You know, a little, what do you call them things? You push, you know, you set it, you push it up there and pull the refrigerator back on it. Push it.
No, front end, not loader. I mean, forklift.
No, he's talking about one of these dollies or whatever.
Oh, it's
yeah.
A dolly?
Well,
a roll around table. All it is. Is that what you're talking about? Like a table?
Well, if
you. No, I'm just thinking a dolly's flat.
Yeah.
You see this?
Well,
it's just got the blade there, and then it comes up, and you push the wheel.
Under. And
then
back.
Yeah,
back.
Yeah. Well, any variation of that. And I thought if I could. Of course, that's too heavy. And if I thought if I could somehow mount a couple of these things there to where I could move around pretty easy. And it'd be fairly inconspicuous, not a real cat, but too inconspicuous. And I just didn't have any, I just couldn't figure out which way to go. And you see, it would be a simple thing. All you need is a box there with a shelf in it, you see. And tilt it a little bit so you can see what you're doing.
And put two of those recorders in it?
Yeah, I use the 250s.
Yeah.
For the, you know, as good as I can get. This other, it's a little hard to manage.
They're awful big.
Yeah.
And heavy.
Yeah. And it'd actually be better if it had the, if it had a little. Oh, it wouldn't matter about that. I can put a little something there. I haven't tested a little bit there or not.
You mean with a little speaker or something?
Something. I could put the radio there and test it through that.
Either that or mount a little, those machines will drive a speaker themselves. Just mount a little old speaker on the box or something.
Yeah.
Get you some kind of cart and just build them in a shelf or a box and put them in there.
Yeah.
We ought to have those other machines ready pretty quick. What, you going up there pretty soon?
Well, I won't go until I have something to work with. And then, you see, all I need would be just a touring car.
Mm-hmm.
If I had the other, you see, I'd have to have a camper or something on a trailer, and that would involve me in too much machinery. I'm not much of a mechanic, you see. So I'd get...
You just need a handful of your microphones and a couple of those machines, and that's it.
Yeah, that's right. With 20-foot cords on it, like this.
Yeah.
Now, you see, I recorded what we did here today.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, it's inconspicuous. Nobody pays attention to it. Nobody gives a damn. Because I don't have any use for it.
Yeah.
I give it to you if you want it. I'll just take over.
It's interesting.
But the reason I did it, you see, just show you how inconspicuous it is. Nobody pays it. Nobody cares. Nobody pays it. Except you just don't want to advertise it.
Yeah.
And now what you say, I got it in there. Suppose I keep it. Well, what would I do with it? You see, there's nothing I can do with it. I can take it out here and play it myself, but I can't give it to anybody else to play it. Well, for one thing, nobody else will play it.
Nobody else will play it.
Well, you don't realize what small demand there is for things like that. You've got to sort of be intellectual, you see, before you fool with this stuff. Now, if it's Duke, you see, you just put it on, but you don't listen to Duke.
Mm-hmm.
You just turn it on as noise, just something to kill the time. And just like if you put good music on it, it'd all be the same. You wouldn't listen to it. You'd just something to kill the time. But this thing, yeah, if it means anything, you see, you've got to put your mind to it. Why, I used to when I started out at this, this little girl, Jack Long, he's a Shakespeare scholar. His little girl stopped by here. She had spent a year in Stratford at a English horse stable. And they had worked her from daylight till dark. And she mucked out the stalls, as they call it, and she gave lessons, and she trained the horses, and she did everything. She's the best with horses I ever saw. I never saw many. But I mean, it was something to watch her handle a horse. And it turned out, she's just 20 years old, it turned out she could relate. She could report on everything they did over there. She could tell you about the horses. She could pick it up right in the middle of anything. And she'd sit there all the time we talked, whether it's supper or after supper. And she'd get started, you know. And when I saw she got started, I'd turn the tape on. I had it. And this little thing, this is rhythm. I used to set it right on top of here with a little board on there. So I'd have it in. I'd just turn it on, slip it back over there, you see. But she'd know it. But she didn't care. And now she'd go ahead about her work the next day. But I stay in here and play that and transcribe it and study it and everything, you see. Because I'm the one that, it works the pee out of me, but it bothers her. So you see how it goes. Why, she wouldn't even listen to one of her own. If she talked for an hour there, you couldn't hire her to listen to her. Mm-hmm. I don't imagine Jack would listen to herself for an hour.
Probably not. Most people won't listen to themselves for long at all.
We can send it home with it and let him try it. See if he can stand himself for an hour.
Now, my voice has gone now to where that I've got some recordings that I made back 12, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And playing guitar. And I had about five guys that we all played together and I recorded it.
Yeah.
And I've got some recordings that you wouldn't even hear me talk now, you wouldn't even believe that was me.
Yeah.
That was on the tapes. I got, I got a stack of them. One guy in there, he didn't have much of an education, but he really had a finger to play a guitar.
Yeah.
And he was just an old milk hand in McAteer's Dairy out there. And I told him, I said, Dan, you'll make a good guitar player. If you will string along with me for a while, I said, I can teach you music that you'll really be proud of yourself. And that's the way I do it. We play for 5 minutes and then stop and then reverse that tape. And I said, now listen at your timing. Listen at my timing, because you can tell my guitar from yours. Which he could and I could too. Listen at the timing and get your foot to going with what you're playing. And it took me, I guess, 3 months. And after about 3 months, you can hear some, I'll let you hear some tapes that you wouldn't believe that it was me and that guy playing. I mean, I would take the lead. Now, playing lead music on a guitar, you're playing about twice as much and as fast as a man is playing the rhythm. And when I'd get tired of playing the lead of the music, I'd just look at him and bow my head, and he'd take over the next bar. And he'd take the lead, and I'd take the rhythm. And there's times in there, now I hear it, and I can tell. But the average guy can't tell when we switch from my guitar to his on the lead. Especially if I'm playing boogie music, which I love that boogie music.
Yeah.
And you can listen to them tapes in there. And we'd never miss a note. And he'd take the lead, and I'd take the rhythm. Because playing lead, you play about twice as much as a guy playing the rhythm music, see. And old Blanton Larrimore, he was the only guy that I never could break. Clyde Larrimore, manager of Silver Spring Shores. I got some of his playing on a mandolin, and he was the only guy in the whole outfit that I couldn't ever break down. But Clyde would miss a note, and then pick it up about two bars over, playing again. When you play your tape back, well, the average guy can tell something went on in there that wasn't supposed to be, see? And Clyde didn't listen to it. And he's, how in the world did I ever do that? Well, you did it now, because there it is, right there. I'll let you hear that. I'll let you hear some of that stuff.
Yeah,
right?
I'd love to hear some of that.
I got a bunch of it upstairs. Still got the old web core. My mic went out on me.
Yeah.
And,
you got plenty of mic.
I got a good one now. I picked it up one Saturday morning, and I didn't have no mic. And I went over there to Herbert, and he just had that one little bitty old place in there. And I said, Herb, you got a mic that we can put on this thing right quick. I said, I need it bad tonight. And he said, yeah. So I give him a grab a little old Shure. Me and him put it on there. This little old Shure mic. And that mic is still on that damn recorder and it still works good.
Hey, that's one of my little green ones.
Yeah. And
about that wide, kind of a flat.
Mm-hmm. Oh. It's still on there, still upstairs there. That web core and that mic is still on there. Thing's still good. Now some of them tapes is some of them there is 20 years old. Yeah. They'll stick a little bit. Usually I just put them on the machine and just let them run.
Oh yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
Then run it back.
Yeah.
They get unstuck. But every now and then you can
get. Well, when David gets that machine ready, if you want to, you can run them off.
You know what? I mean,
I'm
on my guitar. I don't have a guitar, no amplifier. I've run across one of my picks every now and then. It's laying around there and something. I used to carry them with the pockets full.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because of damn women. If they ever get you looking the other way and reach down there and get that pick off your thumb.
Oh, really?
Or get that straight pick or something. I mean, souvenir to them.
Oh.
Well, you didn't get that one back.
Yeah.
So, I used just got pockets full.
Yeah. I'd love to hear just one little bit about what you do with them dogs.
The dog didn't been out of the pen since. I'm ashamed to tell the dog didn't been out of the pen since the last dead deer season.
Well, you going to get them out again?
Oh, if they're living, first deer season.
Well,
I
didn't know you could run deer.
Well, dogs?
Yeah.
Shit, we run them every year.
Is that right?
We run them every year.
How do you get your dogs back? Don't they get lost?
My dogs is trying to come back. I don't worry about them dogs. I don't worry at all about them dogs. They turn them loose, so they may take a deer over to the next county. But you come back there. I got one old dog. And he's about, I imagine he's 10 years old, or older now.
Is that old for a dog?
Yeah. And I still point my finger at a deer track like that. Now I stand up just like this and just point my finger at the deer track. How about it go? If he switches that tail, he seen him trail a deer across the block one morning, limping. On three legs. I didn't know he was crippled. And when I found out, he cut the whole ball of his foot off on the bottom. You remember that morning you and me and Baker was down there?
And we're still running.
Goober took the deer track and went all the way through the block. And come out on the other side. I thought it was taking him a long time to take that track through there. And found out he had the whole ball of his foot cut off.
And we're still running.
No, we're still running. But I point my finger down the deer track. I'm not a goob. He'll smell around there a little bit, smell on the bushes. If he turns around and shakes himself like that, you ought to put him back in the box, because that deer track's too old.
He's all telling you.
Last year, we drove up there and stopped, and I said, Mike, before we turn the dogs loose, I said, Goob's toenails is too long. I said, I'll cut them off before we turn him loose now, because he's bad. He'll snatch one of them out when they get too long. He'll hang it on a limb or something. He'll snatch a whole toenail out.
especially if he's running a deer. And Mike was holding him on the back of the tailgate, and I and the clippers cutting off his toenails. And he kept squirming and squirming, wanting to get loose. And I said, "Go, what the hell's the matter with you? Sit still, I'm gonna cut your goddamn toenails off now." Well, we held him, and I cut him off. Well, that was the deer track right there. And that was the track I was gonna put him on. And whenever Mike turned him loose, he hit the damn road, and he went just about like from the end of that fig tree right on it, right back down the road. And me hollering at him. And he whipped right out into the woods. And by the time he whipped out in the woods, he didn't go 20 feet. I heard the deer when he jumped up. Well, he was running down the sand road. And I told Mike, I said, "Head for the damn road down that goes to the shell mound." I said, "Head for the shell mound road, Mike." I said, "He's taking him right straight down this thing here." Well, I jumped in my truck, and so by the time I jumped in my truck and headed out, the buck crossed the road between me and Mike, and Gooba right behind him. He wasn't 30 yards behind that buck. So I grabbed my radio and I told Mike, I said, "Hit the beehive road." I said, "The deer and the dog just crossed between you and me." And I said, "It's a 6-point buck." Well, Mike headed for the beehive road, and just about the time that he turned, he seen John standing there. So he run on past John then, about halfway up, and I stopped back down there in the bottom. And about the time that I got stopped, I heard John McCall's gun. Vroom! And Gooba hushed. I got in the truck, went on up there, went in 5 minutes. And they done picked the deer up and threw it in the back of Mike's truck, and Gooba was sitting up in there with him. 5 minutes. Done killed.
David, look in here before you go.
Channel 2 Rider on 1700, and the end of this remarkable tape with Richard Burt, that's Burt, and Jack, I don't know Jack's last name, and David, except we never hear from David, this Thursday afternoon, the 5th of September, 74. All a surprise, Burt. And Jack and David is present, and me, they're not in here because they're using strong language. She's in the parlor in her room. Channel 2 Wright, and the end of the visit with Jack Wright and David Stafford and Dick Burt. This